This is gonna be kind of sad, but it's that I feel like I've learned that a lot more people are cheating and doping and taking drugs.
Forget to the lead. Yes. Forget to the three.
This is From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, presented by Primo Golf, clothing for the athletic golfer.
Game on. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jimmer Fredette, and this is From the Logo, presented by Primo Golf. Great to have you with us for our deep range conversations about life inside sports and well beyond the world of sports. Jimmer, how are you feeling now with pro basketball officially tipped off and back in session?
It's back. I love it. I love it. BYU has already played. College is full in swing. NBA obviously has just started. Super excited about that. We had some great games last night too, man. So it's a lot of fun. NBA on NBC is back.
It's back.
Are you kidding me? Like, man, that's childhood stuff. Can't wait for that theme song to hear on Saturdays when, you know, when I'm watching my NBA. Just doing great.
The nostalgia of the music alone from John Tesh. Like when that track dropped for the first time and I heard it officially back, it just brought so many warm memories to my heart. And I know that, I mean, the NBA, to their credit, they jokingly asked all the young stars, like, hey, when you hear this music, when you think NBA, NBC, what comes to mind? And, you know, you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander saying, I have no idea. I have no concept, no memory. And Chet Holmgren, some of these Oklahoma City Thunder stars, like, they get all these budding NBA stars in front of Mike Tirico and these NBA executives, and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about, which was wild. Hilarious and well played. But for you and me, I just so many memories, especially playoff basketball. Like, I had no real interest in game three of the Sonics Rockets series in the first round, but when that music played and the way that they edited the opens and everything that went into the buildup, Bob Costas's voice, I was going to watch. Like, it was destination viewing for me as a kid. And I get my basketball card collection out and remind myself of all of these stars and their backgrounds. Like, it was the good old times, Jimmer. It's part of the Xennial nation, if you will.
Yes. Yes. It was game time. You heard that. I mean, we were after it, right? Like, I just loved it. So I'm excited to see how it comes back. You know, I mean, the younger generation, they'll start to learn about it because I think they're going to have it on there for a while now. NBC, I don't think they're going to give up NBA rights anytime soon. Like, that's one of the things that people watch on TV now. You have to watch it on TV is live professional sports or college sports, whatever that is. So I don't think they're giving up anytime soon. So it's going to make a comeback. So all these young ones, they're going to hear about it. And Shai, you know, Chet, all you guys are gonna understand what NBA and NBC is, like us old people now. All right, so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, Victor Wembanyama laughing like, I don't even know what you guys are talking about. The game has changed a lot, but good to see that NBC format is back. It's returning to its pure form, and I love that they're putting the emphasis on the game, Jimmer, not so much of the side stories and everything that goes on. I feel like it's the game in some ways becomes so commercialized with some of the broadcast partners. Now it just feels like it's in its pure form, and that's what it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, the NBA is itself obviously a great league. It's one of the best leagues we have in this world and some of the best talent. And when you actually watch the game, it's a good product. Like, it just is. The amount of athletes that are out on the floor, how skilled they are now, the shot making ability, you know, the people think that they don't play defense, but they are trying. I swear they like are actually trying to play defense. It just doesn't look like they're trying to play defense because of the fact that they are so talented. So it's a great product. And yeah, the emphasis on the actual game and getting people to watch the actual game and halftime, all that stuff is going to be important as they keep moving.
As always, if you're new to the program, our purpose in this podcast is to uplift, educate, and entertain with an array of topics, including current events, NBA on the NBC, on NBC, if you will. Impactful life experiences and our featured guest lives for sure. We want all of you to feel better after hanging out with us and our guests. And last episode, Jimmer, underrated conversation, if you haven't heard it, with the great Gordon Hayward.
Oh, it was great. Gordon was awesome. He's a really fun guy to chat with, intelligent. He had a little bit of a spiritual journey that we talked about, went to the Vatican. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. He talks about his exit and leaving from Utah, going to the Celtics, which I thought was really open and honest, which I love to hear. So definitely check out Gordon. He was awesome in that last episode.
Well said. We are ready for the opening tip-off with our starting lineup today, which features the early Trey. And within that early Trey, hard hitters like, are you a guy, Jimmer, that appreciates a good field storm or court storm? You've been in a very notable one and experienced it in a way that few have when you were the reason for the court storm. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts because there are polarizing sides on this. When is it appropriate? Is it ever appropriate to do something like that? Safety hazards potentially there. So because so many have been happening in the recent weeks, we're going to talk about that. And a follow-up to a previous conversation we had in an episode earlier about Christmas music and the holiday season. When is it appropriate to turn on your Christmas playlist? I told you this was hard-hitting stuff. Not to mention our feature guest, Connor Mance, who I know you are huge on, Jimmer, and what he has done recently, becoming the fastest American man in history when it comes to the marathon. No American has run the marathon faster than our featured guest today, Connor Mance. He is awesome.
Connor is literally, you know, one of my favorite people. Think about Connor is that he's unassuming, right? Like, you look at him and, you know, he's not very big. You know, he's obviously skinny because he's running all the time. But in that person is like the greatest competitor I've ever seen in my entire life. And he wouldn't tell you that, right? Like, we get to it. I think we get to it a little bit on this podcast where you can see it start to come out of like his belief in himself. But at the same time, he is definitely someone who is very humble. He's very religious. He loves his faith. He loves his family. And then he wants to destroy everybody on that course. And I love it. So it's fun to get to know him a little bit.
He's a dude. In every sense of the phrase, he's just like the silent giant, right? In his own sport. Like, he's small in stature, but mentally, he's a mentally strong giant, and his endurance is obviously next level. We'll discuss all that and ask him the hardest lesson he's ever learned as a pro. And he's dealing with some pretty heavy stuff there. So can't wait to have that conversation with Connor Mance. Okay. Now it's time for the early Trey. Three topics to get the pace of this conversation and podcast going in the right direction. Much like a Jimmer three-pointer would always do to set the proper tone of a basketball game right after tip-off. Jimmer, I'll ask you as I always do, are you ready to shoot?
Let's shoot it.
Let's do it. First shot up is what I just talked about a few moments ago. It is holiday season, Halloween literally upon us, then Thanksgiving shortly thereafter, and we're into Christmas. Jimmer, when this podcast drops, we're less than 2 months from Christmas. That is insane to me. Are you ready, one, for the holiday season?
I am always ready for the holiday season. I wish it never stopped. It's my favorite thing. All from October 1 until, you know, Jan 1, I am thriving. This is my time of year. This is
your
Jimmer
best
time.
Life.
You're talking about Jimmer time, Jimmer mania. That's what this time of year is. And I just absolutely love it. And I'm ready for the holidays. And I know we have, you know, the early trip. What do we think the best holiday is?
Yeah.
What do we think the best holiday is?
Loaded question. And I know that the overwhelming favorite is Christmas because of everything that goes into it and how long it is. It's like a month long or sometimes 2 months long celebration. Yeah. But do you differ there, Jimmer? Or is the best holiday in your mind Christmas?
I don't differ.
I don't. It's Christmas. I'm so sorry. It just is. There's nothing better than Christmas music. There's nothing better than NSYNC singing, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to get me right in the mood for Christmas. The lights, the snow, You know, just we decorate in our house, outside of the house, the cheer. I mean, it just brings winter to life. Frosty the Snowman is one of my favorite movies of all time. I mean, Charlie Brown's Christmas. I thrive on Christmas. So if that's the answer, sorry.
There's nothing like NSYNC to ring in the holidays. I'm so glad you feel strongly about that specific holiday album. Is that your holiday album of choice? Like straight up, that's number one, NSYNC's Christmas album, or is there something else?
No, NSYNC's Christmas album number one. I would say that there's some fairly good ones out there. Obviously, Michael Bublé has a great one. Justin Bieber put out a fire album. Mariah Carey, obviously, with her Christmas. But then, surprisingly, like Katy Perry has like a decent album out there. Just let me let you know. So there you go.
Jimmer, I'm with you. Christmas dominates the world, and it should. And I know that we get caught up in the hoopla. It is literally the season to celebrate the life of Christ, to celebrate him, everything that is good about his life, and to share love and kindness. I love everything about it. Even some of the albums that you brought up that aren't my favorite, but I'll just listen to them because that's part of the deal. I'm a traditionalist with my music. Carpenter's Christmas, Nat King Cole. You take me back to the 50s and 60s, Bing Crosby singing White Christmas. Those are my jazz. If you haven't listened to the Carpenter's Christmas album, Jimmer, please do it for me and report
back. I've heard it. I've heard it all. They're all great. I love them all. I can't argue. I love them all. I'm just
very good. All right, on to topic two. Now that we've got the holiday conversation out there. Oh, I do need to ask, when is it okay to listen to Christmas music, Jimmer? When is it okay?
November, right after before Thanksgiving. I'm November 1st.
You're November 1st.
November 1st.
I think you told me that earlier, but I had to clarify again. November 1.
November 1.
Okay. I'm probably Thanksgiving week, but okay, we can talk about that later. We have podcasts upcoming that will lead us right into that season. Okay, second topic in the early tray. And this has happened a few times in recent events, sporting events, mostly at the college football level, and because that's what's happening right now. The NFL doesn't allow this. I mean, they put the kibosh on that stuff.
Yeah.
But I've watched field storms all over the country happen. One kind of a weird one at Arizona State, when they beat Texas Tech a few weeks back, and the goalpost just came slamming down. Like, it just snapped down. They got a $50,000 fine from the Big 12 Conference. And again, there are fines being imposed all over the country for stuff like this. And the same will happen during a big basketball win. But where do you stand, Jimmer, on the idea of a field storm or court storm? When is it appropriate? When is it okay? Yep. Is it ever okay?
I think that it's okay, but only if you are an unbeaten team, unranked team that's beating a top five or maybe top 10 team. I think top five team. Like, if you're an unranked team and you beat a top five team, go crazy. Could not care less. The way that BYU stormed the field after Utah, I love BYU. I am a BYU guy through and through. We did not need to storm the field. We need to act like we'd been there before, right? Like, hey, we won this game. We were supposed to win this game. We were ranked higher, right? Like, so there is no need for us to rush the field. And that goes not just for them. Arizona State, I didn't think they needed to rush the field. Like, all of these things, I think we're getting field rushing, court rushing happy. And it's only for special occasions, because you are an underdog, like a big underdog, and then go in and beat a behemoth. I think that that is the right time to do it. I don't think that you should be doing it when you're definitely the higher ranked team or ranked at all or expected to win. So that's where I stand with that.
Okay. So when Jimmer Mania went next level and you, as the ninth ranked BYU Cougars, beat San Diego State back in 2011 and the Aztecs were ranked number four. So they were the higher ranked team. It was at the Mary Center. Did you feel like that was an appropriate court storm, or do you go against what most BYU fans did that night when they were trying to get to you?
I go against it. So sorry, BYU fans. I was nervous when I got in, when the court was stormed, right? Like, these people were grabbing me and holding me, and I was trying to get out and, you know, trying to, you know, not get my jersey ripped off and trying to get away from everybody. So for me, it was unexpected. I didn't think that they were going to storm the court. And, you know, for me, like I said, it has to be like a big deal. When we played Wake Forest, they came to us and we won that game, that could have been a storm court. Yeah, that could have been a time when they stormed the court because they were number one in the country and we were unranked. If we would have beat them, I think that would have been fine, but not until then. So that's where I stand.
Jimmer sticking to his principles. Controversial opinion, Jimmer. I'm here for it, man. It's good stuff. Okay, finally, and a quick one. Just out of curiosity, because we've talked about like which game you'd choose two prime seats to, and that was a fun conversation. What's the best playoff environment? And you can take this to pro or college in whatever capacity you want, because playoff environments in general are magical. But what's the best?
Yeah, this is such a hard question. There's so many great ones. Like, I mean, a lot of people in Utah would say that the Jazz were. I mean, they have such a great home court advantage and they have such a great fan base. You know, for me, I don't think it's in the U.S. I don't think the best home court advantage is in the U.S. It's over in Europe in soccer, right? Like Barcelona, Manchester United, Real Madrid. These are the people that actually have the real home field advantage. Those people are crazy about their soccer. They chant the whole game. They light fires the whole game. They are yelling the whole game. And you don't see anything like it. If you've never been to a European soccer game, there is nothing like it in environments. So that has to be the best playoff environment when, you know, two teams like a Barcelona versus a Real Madrid are facing off in the playoffs or in the championship in the La Liga.
Yes.
That is the best environment you can be in.
Love that. And they're all hanging on a moment, especially in a game of soccer. They're just hanging on a moment.
They are.
And because you gave the international answer, and I agree with you, World Cup soccer, to me, I mean, that's the playoff system of playoffs for me. Like I've witnessed it. I've experienced it. It's unlike anything I've ever been a part of. To see those later rounds in the World Cup, my goodness, life and death hanging in the balance. It is just insane. So yeah. I like that answer. If we're talking American sports, gosh, I'm having a hard time not thinking about recent Major League Baseball playoffs and the ripple effect that happens when a big home run is hit late in the game to send your team to the next, you know, round of the playoffs or the World Series. That is special. American sports,
it is.
Baseball, underrated. I think that playoff environment along with hockey, those are magic for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good stuff. We're going to call our timeout here and take our first break. Connor Mance gets the full court press next one from the logo with Jimmer Fredette continues, presented by Primo Golf. He is a monster in the running world. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Phil Mickelson, six-time major champion and captain of the High Flyers, but you already knew that. What you might not know is I'm a huge joggers guy. But it wasn't always like this. Once I gave them a shot, though, there was no going back. And it's not just me. The whole team loves them.
Are you sure about this, Phil? I don't know if I'm a joggers guy.
Yes, you are. See? He loves them. And it's not just the joggers. We're obsessed with the buttery soft quarter zips and blade collars so sharp, you might actually hurt yourself.
Oh,
that's why I'm so thrilled to announce that Primo Golf Apparel will be the official sponsor of the High Flyers in 2025. I did have one small request. How do they look?
Amazing.
Yeah, did that feel good? Oh my gosh. Now easy.
Who's got my pants?
From the logo with Jimmer Fredette continues, presented by Primo Golf. It is time for the full court press with our VIP guest. And while he is unassuming and incredibly humble, he frankly deserves to be in every VIP section, especially in the runner's world. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest is Connor Mance. His resume includes two-time NCAA men's cross-country individual champion while he was running for Brigham Young University. He also recently competed in the Paris Olympics in the marathon for Team USA, had a top 10 finish there, and perhaps most notably, is the fastest American in history in the marathon thanks to what he pulled off in Chicago a few weeks back. Connor Mance is on From the Logo. Jimmer and I had a chance to speak with him a few nights ago. Here is that conversation, and it is a banger. Connor, first and foremost, congratulations on another historic performance and becoming the fastest American man ever in the marathon. That phrase is crazy. What has your life been like since you pulled off something that no other American man has ever done?
Oh, man. I don't know if fortunately or unfortunately is the right word. It hasn't been too different yet. A lot of podcasts, a lot of interviews, but other than that, it's been pretty normal. I still had to come home and I still have to sweep and clean the house. And I don't know why sweeping is the first chore that came to mind, but it was something that
you still have to sweep.
It must be sweeping a lot.
We just got a new house like 8 months ago. So I had to sweep the basement, trying to, you know, get all that dust that was down there gone. But a lot of stuff like that.
The work continues. But do you celebrate in any sort of frivolous fashion with a cake or a dessert or a food or something? You had to do something to celebrate, did you not?
Yeah, I did a lot of little, or I don't know if little things or big things is the right word. A lot of desserts all throughout the last
week. Let's go. Let's go.
Nike brought me and my family to, what's it called? Oh, it's like Tucano's. I don't even remember the name of the restaurant, but it was in Chicago. But it's like Tucano's Brazilian barbecue where they're cutting.
Is it Fogo
like,
de Chão?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Fogo, yes.
I know my meats, man. I know it's coming from us.
Jimmer does know the food.
I know the food.
He does know that.
Yes.
That's great. Connor, just before we get started, right? Runner right here. Okay. So
listen.
In basketball, never ran more than a mile in my life at the same time, right? It was always quick bursts. So I was working on sprinting, stopping, starting, defensive slides, all of the things, right? So after I retired, recently got into running. I'm starting to run between 5 to 8 miles, a couple times a week. And just curious, two different questions, okay?
Yeah.
One, what shoe should I be wearing for, myself as a beginner here? And what is a good time for me on my 5-minute mile?
Okay. First question, what shoes should you be running in? I would say the Nike Vomero 18.
Okay.
It's kind of one of the ones that it came out with it, I think, like sometime early this year. But it's a great shoe. It's a good all-around shoe. Okay.
Connor is a Nike athlete, are you?
That's full disclosure.
Full disclosure, I am sponsored by Nike, but
it is a great shoe.
And what was the second question? You run?
Yeah, what should I be running up on a 5-mile run? Like what's a good time for me to be having as a beginner? What do you think?
Oh man. It really is hard because, everybody starts in a different spot.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's hard when you haven't been running, much more than those sprints that you were doing in basketball. It's like, I would say a great time for someone just starting would be 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It's about 8 minutes per mile. And but it varies so much. Too many variables to really give you a...
I know. I'm training.
Good or not good.
I'm training in high altitude too over here in Denver, right? So that. So I'm trying to do that, and then also I'll eventually get to a race somewhere, probably a half marathon at first, and go from there. But yeah, my goal is always to get it under that 40 minutes. If I can get it under 40 minutes, I'm doing really well for myself. So that's good
to
hear.
That's awesome.
Good to hear.
Okay, Connor. Obviously, you are so skilled in several facets of elite running, and you have taken to the marathon like no other American before. But I do need to point out for those that may not be aware of your history that you are a two-time NCAA national champion in cross country. That's different than running marathons, clearly. So what was the biggest change in your training regime as you went from the cross country scene in college at BYU to now you're running marathons and competing in Paris and finishing in the top 10 of the Olympic marathon. And of course, in history, like we just pointed out.
Well, thanks for all that, giving me all the going over a lot of these accolades again. I think the biggest thing we changed was I'm still coached by Coach Ice down at BYU. The biggest thing is I don't I don't run on grass anymore. That's one of the big things. But the biggest thing is I just run more. So in a lot of my workouts, they're just longer. At BYU, my longest like hard run would be, we do a workout like 6 miles, maybe 6.5 miles long. Now I'll go do workouts that'll be as long as 12 miles, but I'll consistently, most of the workouts coach will have a steward between like 8 and 12 miles. But we'll do runs where we'll run 25 miles. We won't really call them, even though they're workouts, they're not like the hard days. So we don't call them workouts for some reason, but, we'll do a long run of, in college, I think my longest run was 20 miles. As far as I was training for cross country track, and now I will run every 2 weeks, 25 miles. And then in the middle of those, I'll do what we'll call pickups, and I'll go like 4 miles at somewhere between like 4:30 and 4:40 pace, 3 to 4 miles at about that pace at the end of the long run. And so I wasn't doing anything like that in college. So the biggest difference, it's just running more and running longer on the hard days.
It's interesting to me. How long did that take for you to start really building up that stamina, right? To be able to run that amount of miles in that mileage per week, right? Like we said, it was such a difference. So how long did that take? Because I know as an amateur runner, it's taken me a long time just to get the 5 miles. So how long is it taking you to really be able to accumulate those miles?
That's what's an interesting, like, is every year I've gone a little higher on my miles. So I would say, 4 years since I graduated or finished my eligibility at BYU, to get up to 130 but per week. But some of these weeks I'm, increasing just a little bit, or some of these years I only increased a little bit. So my first marathon, I think I got up to 115 miles a week. And then last year I got up to 120, and then this year I got up to 150. Or 2 years ago, I think I got up to 120, and last year 125, this year 130. So I'm just slowly increasing just a little bit more every year. But yeah, I don't know how to answer that question correctly.
Connor Mance is with us on From the Logo, two-time national champion at the NCAA level in cross country. As we mentioned, an Olympic marathoner, and now he is the American standard for all marathon runners. So Connor, now that you're the guy that everyone is potentially looking to as, oh man, he is the elite level, who are some of your influences and the people that you looked up to as you built to this point of your career to push you along?
I'll go to high school. There were a lot of really good marathon runners in the U.S. at the time. There was a guy named Meb Keflezighi. My dad was running marathons to lose weight, and so he would tell me who his favorite runners were, and that's where I just followed. And Meb Keflezighi was one of them. He won Boston. He won the New York Marathon. And he had an Olympic medal. So he was just an incredible athlete. Had a super long career. I think his last Olympics was 2016. And his first was 2000 in Sydney. So he had, that's 16, 17 years of between his first and last Olympics. But then as I was a cop, when I was running in college, Jared Ward was a huge influence, a huge inspiration. He also ran at BYU, but he was an incredible athlete. And he'd come join us occasionally when I was in college. And it was just the gap between us, like, as a national championship contending team and to Jared Ward as a sixth place finisher at the Olympics. It was pretty big. And it was just inspiring to see an athlete who've kind of gone through the ranks of Ice Stone and like been a good high school runner, a good college runner, a great college runner, a good professional, a great professional. And so it was really cool to watch him and his journey, both as an athlete and then as more of a mentor for the last, I don't know, 8 years or so. Maybe less than that. But ever since I went to BYU, he's just been a good mentor to all the athletes there.
No, that's awesome to hear. I actually know Jared pretty well, and he's a great guy. Awesome runner, but a really good human being and willing to help. So that's cool to hear. Connor, I want to go back a little bit. What made you start running as a kid, right? Because for me, if someone told me that I had to run, it was like a punishment. I was like, all right, man, I have to go do this. All right, fine. What made you be like, hey, you know what? Running's my thing. This is what I want to do.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think all of us enjoyed it when we were really little.
Yeah, right.
Because I've gone and spoke at like elementary schools, and every kid wants to race me. Yeah, it doesn't matter how, like, am I at like kindergarten? If I speak like kindergartners, everyone wants to race. So I think there is some like something innate in us that like we all like running. And then we all get tired of it because there's more fun games to play than just running against your friends across the, you know, the soccer field or whatever, the basketball court. So when I was, as I was getting older, I realized it was something I was slightly good at in elementary school. And then when I was in elementary school, my dad and my older brother, they ran a half marathon together. And I thought, you know, as a very impressionable 8 or 9 year old, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. Seeing my dad and brother just train together and run this, you know, 13.1 miles. And so I was like, Dad, I want to do that. And he was like, well, wait till you're like older, because we don't want to like have to go pick you up, like walk the course backwards to find you at like an aid station 2 miles in, like I'm done with this. So when I was 12, so not that much older, my dad signed me up for a half marathon, and I finished it, and I was like, this is fun. I think it was just a big community, and a lot of the adults were very impressed, and I think that was just something cool to be like, you know, no adult ever gave me any recognition in soccer, but man, in a half marathon, they're like, holy crap, your time's amazing. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means, but if you say so, absolutely. And so when I was 12, I really found that love for running. And then in high school, I was kind of pressured in the cross country, and I loved it. So I don't know if pressure's the right word there, but like a lot of people realize you have to run cross country, and then it was you have to run track. And so I just kind of got put into it in a very low pressure way.
Connor, you're always so humble. And I love that you said, I noticed that I was slightly better than others in elementary school. Well, now you're just worlds apart from most on the globe. So at what point did you feel like in this timeline of running, you had taken a significant step forward and were elite among the competition?
That's a great question. It's interesting. I feel like in high school, I circumstances were very good to me. I got to Utah, my freshman year of high school in Utah. The state was like kind of at a low in how good people were in cross country. And then every year the state got better and better and better. And so my freshman year of high school, I was second at the state meet, and I was like, this is awesome. Like I'm going to be winning by my senior year. And by my senior year, I was second again. But I was running a lot faster, and like I was one of the best in the country, but I was still second in state. While my freshman year, I was like, nobody nationally was looking at me as this like great athlete. I think like my freshman year was, and sophomore year, I kind of realized, oh, I'm like really good at this nationally. I think I was a little naive, and I really thought I was better than I was when I was at a younger age. So I think that like fueled the fire too. I was like, I'm going to be the best in the world. And it was like, not even the best in the state at that point, but I'm like, I'm going to be the best in the world. Like just watching. That was in my mind. I wasn't telling anybody that because, I try to be humble, but yeah, in my mind, maybe I'm not what I tell myself, but then I get beat. Running is a very humbling sport, so can't be cocky for too long.
I've been there. You know, when I was younger, my whole thing was I wanted to play in the NBA, right? And that was my only plan. I had a plan A, and that was it. And it was to run in the NBA. So it sounds like that, right? But you have to be a little bit delusional to become the best at something. And, you know, obviously you had that innate belief in yourself to be able to do that, which is incredible because that's what world-class athletes have. Where have you found that, you know, that mindset from? How did you gain that mindset? Was it from your family, just within? Where did you get that mindset? Because it's not everyone has it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it came from my parents. I think they were just supportive in anything that we did. and just for me and my siblings growing up. And they were like, yeah, you can do whatever. You can be the best and whatever. It didn't seem like there was anything that like really limited us. My parents weren't like, oh, it's not gonna happen. They were like, we're gonna support you. And yeah, like my parents would always make a point to come to any races or soccer games or piano recitals for any of my siblings or I. And you know, that's a little uncommon. I found that in high school when I was like, I would go to meets and yeah, parents weren't always there supporting, you know, my teammates or my friends. But I think my parents just believed, you know, whatever you're going to do, like put an effort in. They were very, very big on that. Like, they didn't care how we did as long as we like tried our best. And that was, and I think that just gave us this self-belief that was delusional, like you said, but it allowed us to be delusional. I think that's an important thing.
Connor, I know that running and especially marathons are not only physically exhausting, but man, it obviously takes significant mental strength as well. And we'll talk about both aspects there, but I'm going to go back to something that you've told me and others several times, but for our From the Logo audience, I think they'll benefit from hearing it as well. And I'm paraphrasing, but you said something to the effect of, in my mind, I know I can handle pain better than everybody else. And that's a big component of why I'm going to win. You can correct the phrasing if you would like,
yeah.
But I'm more interested in just that mentality and where it comes from.
I think it does go a little bit back to that. I think delusion is a great word that Chimmer brought up. It comes from this confidence of, or maybe like delusion that I want to be the best. And so I'm going to work for it harder than anybody else. But now whether that is true or not, it doesn't matter because if I believe it, I'm going to work just that much harder. And yeah, I think I believe that a lot in college, but now I'm like, I don't know if I can, but when I'm in the race and I'm hurting, I tell myself I can. Whatever, you know, whatever it is that gets me just a little bit better in races or workouts, like, I think that's helpful. I also think there's a little bit of mental like practice that comes from that, or that is affected by that. So like if I'm going to races and I'm like, this is really hard before the race, I'm going to be like, this is going to be really hard. I'm expecting that. I'm preparing for that. Then I perform better because when that hard moment comes up in the race where I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can hold on to this pace. I don't even have to think. I've already made that decision beforehand that I knew it was going to be difficult.
All right. One more question before we move to some Olympic themed questions that I'd love to ask you. And you and Jimmer have this connection in Paris forever, which yeah. is so cool, which we want to examine. But going back to the mental aspect specifically, what kind of mental strength training do you do to make yourself ready and prepared for the high intensity and incredibly high level races you run in?
Yeah. I'm here with a sports psychologist. I know that's not the exact strength training, but it's nice to have somebody that I can go through my thoughts with before competitions, after competitions. And then he'll give me things to do and I'll practice then. So like one of the things, before this race that I worked on a few different things, but one was kind of not focusing on the time. I know that's counterintuitive in a way because my goal was to go after the record, but not focusing on the time I'm running every lap in, focusing on competing and being like, I want to beat that guy. And when things got hard, then I could focus on the time. But during the majority of the race, it was, how do I beat the guys around me? And so in workouts, it would be, I just need to push. It wouldn't be focusing on my watch and what times I was hitting, the splits I was hitting. There would come a time in certain workouts where I would try and get be okay with coach beforehand. Sometimes I wouldn't, but it would be, I just want to push a little bit. And so I would do these workouts where I'd, you know, pace 7 miles at my marathon pace. And then I'd do one really fast mile at the end just to get that mental push in. So it was just a little bit of I know a lot of things that are practiced from him, from my sports psychologist. And yeah, there's, I don't know how to describe it. I think the other thing is just like telling myself to relax, relax your face, relax your body, relax your arms, prior to competition, prior to workouts. I know that doesn't sound very mental, but it really is like keeping yourself relaxed, keeping yourself saving your energy for the end of the race is just super important in areas like a marathon.
Is it going into a race, is it harder mentally or physically? Because it sounds like a weird question, but I'm sure that there is some serious mental blocks and mental roadblocks that you're running into running a marathon and just competing and racing in general. Obviously, you're pushing yourself to brings physically, but mentally you have to really be there. So I'm curious, what's harder for you, mentally or physically?
It depends on how well I've prepared mentally before a race. Some races have definitely been much harder mentally, but then I have others that are much harder physically. And so it really depends on where my strengths are at. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
Does.
it really depends on what I'm working on. I felt like this last marathon, I did struggle mentally a little bit, but it wasn't super hard. Yeah, it wasn't super hard physically. I think it was because I had the nerves on me. The Olympic trials marathon was probably, I know we're gonna get into the Olympics a little bit, but the Olympic trials marathon was probably the hardest race mentally I've ever run because I let a lot of the pressure get to me. There was a lot of outside things going on, and it was like, in marathon running, if you're an Olympian, you're forever an Olympian, and you have that status for our sport, and that's kind of the highest status you can have, and unless you're an Olympic medalist. And so it was really hard going into that race, and I was two spots and five spots out in the track events at the last Olympics. They take top three, and I was fifth and eighth in my events. And so going into the marathon, I was the favorite to win, or at least the favorite to make the team, because I'd run the fastest, I'd run the fastest time by any American in the last like 2 years up to that point. So I just have this pressure on me, and it got to me. I did not do a good job. It like really messed with me. So in the race, I was like kind of freaking out. Before the race, I was kind of freaking out, and I wasn't executing the things I needed to physically. I don't remember my legs hurting that race, but I can remember all my thoughts, all the demons, kind of coming out. And so, yeah, it depends on where my strengths are before the race.
It's interesting because, obviously being a part of some of the Olympic trials, it's just in general, I think if you ask any Olympic athlete, the trials are way more nerve-wracking than the actual Olympics, just because of the fact, like you said, if you don't make it, you're not an Olympian, right? So like that pressure to try to get there, some of the tournaments where you had to play and to get there just were way more pressure filled than when you actually got to the Olympics. So that's super interesting to hear to hear you say that, because I think every Olympian has that sentiment.
Connor, I want to follow up on that race, because obviously you do qualify and you get through the nerves, as tough as that was, and I appreciate your vulnerability there, because that's a lot to handle. And frankly, it's nice to hear somebody of your level, how great of an athlete you are, that it's hard for you too. Okay. That I appreciate that, because it is difficult. But when you realized, I made the team, I am an Olympian, I'm going to represent the United States of America in Paris, what was that moment like for you?
That was pretty special. And I think it came a little bit like after the race, and then it really hit me a few weeks later, but it was pretty special. Not I don't want to like blow it too much out of proportion, but it definitely felt like I had made it as a pro runner. Like before that, I was doing well. Like I'm getting paid. I'm competing against, some of the best in the world. I have these really cool opportunities. But up to that point, when people ask you like, "Oh, you run professionally," they ask first, ask like, "What's your mile time?" And I don't run the mile, and then I tell them I run the marathon. They ask about Boston. That's always the next question. But the other thing is, when you say you're an Olympian, they actually take you seriously. like the everyday person, it's not like, yeah, I run professionally. And it sometimes that's like, oh, like you're just trying to live a hobby. And I'm like, no, like actually, like this is my living. But when you're an Olympian, there is some respect from, like, a little bit of respect from everyone that comes with that. And there's definitely, like, just people that, or I don't know, like, for me, it was almost like a self-respect thing, too. Like, I've always, you know, dreamed about the Olympics since I was young. So crossing that finish line, knowing I qualified, it was just super, just, I don't know, comforting to, like, have that done.
It's an amazing moment to be named an Olympian. Like, that's something we both have in common. It's an incredible feeling. And, you know, just kudos to you for putting yourself out there and doing that. And, you know, you're a marathoner. So, like, that's a prestigious event in the Olympics, right? There are thousands of people that are there watching it, millions of people. It's prestigious. People are still trying to figure out what 3x3 basketball is, and which is funny. I'm over here talking and I'm like, yeah, I was an Olympian. Well, yeah, what were you Olympian for? Well, for 3x3 basketball. They're like, oh, that's a sport? Didn't know that, but that's how it works. But hey,
you don't need to clarify it's 3-on-3. You say basketball and everyone's like, yeah, I watched it.
Exactly. They're like, wait, so you played with LeBron and Steph and those guys? I was like, yeah, I was on the team, but no big deal. So
Same Olympic team.
Exactly. All right. So question for you, what is your favorite piece of gear that you got from the Olympics? Cause you get so much stuff, but what was your favorite?
Oh man, I should say something Nike, but there was one of the Ralph Lauren, it was like the USA and like blue with the red USA on
yes.
it.
Yes. Same one.
Same. My is favorite. That for you? Oh, my it's favorite. So nice.
It's the best. It's the absolute best. Everything Ralph Lauren, I mean, just incredible stuff. But it is the Olympic gear. They talk about it all the time. It is as good as people talk about. And yes. That's what I have to say. And, you know, just amazing, amazing gear. It's just a great, great time. Connor, were you out in France early? Did you go to the USA training facility outside of Paris for just the USA athletes, or did you have a different regimen when you got there?
So I went out a little early. Was there at opening? Well, no, I got there right before opening ceremonies.
Yep.
And then I went over to the day after opening ceremonies. I went over to Saint Moritz, Switzerland. It's like town, like a ski town in Switzerland. And it was incredible. Just tried to stay at higher altitude to keep that training up.
Yeah.
And then we came over about a week before the marathon and we were back in France. So we were there a little early. I don't know if it was the same training facility we went to. There was, it was outside the village. You know what I'm talking about? Is that the same one?
It's the same one. That's where all the athletes were. We were there right from the beginning with some of the track athletes that were there, some of the sprinters, and then we were there with rugby and some of the volleyball players. But we were there super early, so people were kind of trickling in after we left because ours was towards the beginning of the Olympics. So,
oh, nice. Yeah, that place was great.
It was great.
Always, always trying to get back there to get the food because the food at the village was terrible.
It was bad. It was bad. Oh, that's funny.
Connor, what was the most surreal part of the opening ceremonies and the build-up to the Olympics?
Oh, man. The opening ceremonies, I think it was when you see all the athletes from every country and, like, you just know everybody there. Even on Team USA is just world-class at something.
Yeah.
Like, and meeting, I think one of my favorite things is just meeting people from all over. It's hard because I met a lot of the track athletes. I knew a lot from other countries beforehand and like marathon runners, but then like meeting or like looking around and seeing just what countries people are from, trading pins, talking to athletes, seeing what they're doing. It was just pretty special.
How many pins did you collect, Connor? Did you collect pins?
I did. I think I only got like 10 because I wanted to, or 10 different countries. I really didn't make it a priority till like toward the end.
Yeah.
And yeah. that was a mistake because most people had already traded.
It's a mistake. You got to get there early. This is what, yeah. So this is what we found because we went to the Pan Ams in 2023, our 3x3 team. And it's kind of like a mini Olympics, right?
Yeah.
So we get there and I knew nothing about the pins. And all of a sudden, you know, in Pan Ams, they're like, hey, let's trade pins. And so we did. And we got a few from the, you know, from the Olympic or the Pan Am committee to be able to go. So we're like, well, this is a thing. So for the Olympics, we are going out and we bought our own pins for USA 3x3 awesome. Basketball. We ordered a bunch. We had like 100 and we'd go into the village and we would just start getting all the pins. The best one that I got, I think it's the most rare, was actually a girl from North Korea. And they were not giving out pins. I don't know how I got it. Now, it didn't say North Korea specifically, right? Because I don't think that were in the Olympics per se, but it was something to do. And they're like, yes, that is a North Korean pin right there. And I think there was like two or three of them in the Olympics. So I think I got one of the most rare ones, but I was on it. I was on the pins.
That's awesome. I didn't get any rare ones, but I'll do that in 2028. Maybe as long as I make the team, which, you know, it should happen. I'll go with the other marathoners. We'll just order USA marathoner pin. You know, do the same thing. Get 100 of them.
Listen, I am named the managing director of the 3x3 basketball program. So now I pick the actual Olympic team for 2028. So I will be at the Olympics in a different capacity, but we need to go trade pins with each other. Okay. Yeah. We need to make that pact. Be able to get to the village. We'll find a time and we'll go do it.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's do it.
All right. So let it be written. We're putting it on the schedule for both of you. Pin exchange in Los Angeles in 2028. And I have a follow-up question there in a moment, Connor. But before we go there, I want to go back to one of my favorite moments watching you compete in Paris. I believe it was I can't even remember what time it was. In my house in Utah.
I think it was like midnight here.
Yeah. It was close to midnight, but I'm watching you and one of your best friends and former BYU teammate, Clayton Young, finish the marathon. And of course, top 10 finish, which was incredible. But then you two are high-fiving all of the runners as they come across the finish line. And Connor, I got emotional. It was such a sign of who you are. And it's one of those, for lack of a better phrase, it felt like I was watching something very Christ-like happening before my eyes. And I applaud you for that. And it will stick with me forever. I know I've asked you this question before, but again, would love for this audience to hear it. What prompted you to do that after such a grueling race to stay at the finish line and welcome the other runners?
Oh man. I was kind of going off the example of Clayton. He was kind of being the leader of our little pack of BYU male distance runners that were at the Olympics. But, he was doing it. But also, I ran 20 miles with a lot of those guys in that race. You know, you're spending an hour and a half, an hour, 45 minutes together. You feel like a connection with a lot of these guys. And, some of them I had raced in the past. There was a guy from Morocco who... he's actually transferring allegiance to the U.S., but I was pretty good friends with him. It was just really fun to see him finish. There was a guy from Australia who I'd known for a while and kind of looked up to in my younger years, and it was cool to see him finish. The Canadian record holder, and then another Canadian named Rory Linkletter, who also ran with me at BYU, was finishing. So it was a lot of, I did have a connection with a lot of these guys, so it was just really cool to, you know, finish. And I mean, selfishly, I wanted to see how everyone did. Like, these are my friends, and I want to know what they're doing. So it might have seemed a little more Christ-like than it was, but it was just cool to be, doing something with a lot of friends and people that were, I'd say, competitors I've looked up to, and I wanted to know where they were going to finish. I knew all the guys who beat me. I saw all of them pass me at one point, but the rest of the guys, I had to, turn back and just chat up with them.
Yeah. What were your feelings as you were going into that race, right? Take me into your mindset, and also just take me a little bit into your pre-race ritual of what you do before you get into, you know, some of the most important races of your life?
Yeah. So pre-race ritual is kind of funny. We'll like, I don't know if why this is a thing. I think it was like American Fork High School started this thing. And then we got like 10 runners from American Fork on the BYU team at one point in time. And so the whole BYU team started doing it too. Which is American Fork's also where Clayton Young went to high school and Casey Klinger and Connor McMillan, some of the really good runners BYU's had in the last decade. But they would, we like lay down on our backs, put our feet up, and do that for like 5 to 10 minutes. And then somewhere along the lines, we start listening to the song In the Blood by John Mayer. Just it's an acoustic song, kind of quiet. And so we listened to that song, Clayton and I did, and then we did our warm up, like 10 minutes. And then we prepared, because it was so hot in Paris, we had like ice hats on. They gave us 10 hats filled with ice. So I had one on during the warm up. I put a new one on at the start of the race. And then every 5K, I would grab one with like my water bottle and put another. I'd throw off my old one, put the new one on. And it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Great.
But yeah, it was the feelings, I was just so excited. It was just so cool to be there. I saw a few nights before Kenneth Rooks, who was my teammate at BYU as well, but also my roommate at the Olympics. I saw him win a silver medal in the steeplechase, and that was pretty incredible because nobody other than like us that were teammates with him like would have picked him for a medal. And that was so inspiring. And then in the 1500, we have Cole Hawker won it for the U.S. And then Yair Nuguse took third. And I don't think we'd won a medal in that event since 2016. And so it, like, it was pretty cool to see two guys, you know, go gold and bronze. Then another athlete in Grant Fisher won a bronze in the 10K. So I went to the starting line fully believing I was going to win a medal. Mm. I was like, it's going to happen. This is the U.S.'s Olympics. Like, we won... I don't think we won a single medal in a distance event. And, or no, we won one medal in the 5K in Tokyo.
Okay.
There was no gold medals for the U.S. in track on the men's side in Tokyo. So I was like, this is it. I'm going to win a medal in the marathon. Like, we haven't won a medal in the marathon since, I think, on the men's side since 04.
Wow.
So I was like, it's gonna happen, it's my day. Didn't happen, but that's what I was thinking. Like, my mind was like, it's going to happen, you know. We talk a little bit about delusion. I was ranked like 60th going into it or something like that, but I was like, I'm gonna win a medal today, I'm gonna be in the top three. And that was one of the cool moments, was getting to the start line, being there with some of the best runners in the world, and then actually racing and competing.
Not a medal, Connor. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jimmer.
No, I was just going to say, I had the same feeling going into our Olympics. Like, I was going to win a medal, right? Like,
yeah.
We were the number one team in the world going into the Olympics. Number one player going into the world was myself going into the Olympics. Like, we were ready. And we were like, man, we're going to win a medal at the Olympics. And, you know, second game in, I tear my adductor and I'm out for the rest of the Olympics. Can't play, right? And we don't end up winning. But it doesn't matter. Like, regardless, you know, those feelings are real. And then that disappointment can be real too, right? That disappointment can be real. But also the fact is, we put everything into it. You put everything into it to be able to compete at the Olympics of the world stage. And sometimes in athletics, it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. And the way that you feel it, but you have to believe it regardless. And I love that you have that, because I know it's going to happen. I'm excited, man, for you. 2020. You're getting me pumped up right now.
it was one of the more tough parts, was like everybody's following through on three, and I mean at least from our group, because of you and the whole like BYU connection, like our athletic trainer was the head athletic trainer for track and field for the U.S. team, so he's all in on 3-on-3 basketball. And
yeah,
it was just tough. Like, I was like, what's happening, why aren't they playing well? And then he was like, told us that your adductor, and was like, so is he gonna be good? He's like, nah. Like, I was like, is he gonna play next game? Like, is he gonna be like, Like, how bad of a tear are we talking? You know?
Believe me, I was there. I was there. I was like, how can I do anything? We were thinking about like putting my leg in a huge wrap and then putting like, you know, like an elastic band that you use.
Oh, yeah.
Putting that around my waist and tying it around my leg so that it could be like a contraption where I could like move it back and forth. Oh. We were trying everything, but it was, they were just like, it's fully torn and it was a big tear. And it was just Gracilis and that, both of them. And unfortunately, they were just like, you're just not going to have any stability. You know what I mean? So because of that, you're just not going to be able to, not going to be able to move. And it was a 10-month recovery. I mean, I just barely got back a couple months ago, fully healthy. So it took some time. It was a serious thing. It kind of stunk, but that's how it works, man. Right. That's how it works. But we both got 2028 now.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
That's right.
The motivation to go and get that medal that both of you are talking about, Jimmer, of course, in your general manager role as you pick the Olympic team, and Connor, you're preparing to go and run a marathon in LA. How has not winning a medal shaped your training and your perspective to try and go and do that and be the first American to win a medal in a marathon since 2004?
Well, that's a great question. I think if I had won a medal, I'd be pretty complacent. Like in my mind, there's nothing bigger than an Olympic medal, or at least an Olympic gold as far as the marathon goes. So I think had I won a medal, I might have been a little complacent for my other upcoming races, because I was like, I would have thought, oh, I've done it, you know. But now I kind of see myself as, and even if I'd won a bronze or a silver, I'd be like very happy, but I would feel like, oh, I checked the box. I like, that's kind of a career goal. And so taking eighth, being, I think it was 71 seconds away from bronze, it's like, okay, I need to make up that gap. At the minimum, I need to make up that gap at the end of a marathon. And so it's just, I don't know, it kind of helps me when I'm it's not struggling during the hard workouts. For me, it's the days when it's rainy and snowy and cold outside that it's like, that's when I'm like, no, I got this. I can do this. Like, I can go out when it's, you know, 10 degrees out and slushy and snowy, and I can just bundle up and I can just go get the work in, and it'll pay off.
I love that. There's, as an athlete, for me, the working out and the grind was some of the most fun that I had as an athlete.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, once I found out that that wasn't what I love to do anymore, when I didn't want to go work out as much, I knew it was over for me, because
that makes sense.
That was some of the most fun times that I used to love to put on my headphones, go into a gym by myself and work out and get better. That was what I lived for my whole life. And so it sounds similar to you, right? You have this mindset of, hey, I'm close. I'm close, and I know what I need, what it takes to get there. There's just incremental things that I need to do that I can, you know, can control, that I'm gonna go out and do. And obviously a testament to you to go out there and break the American record for the marathon and be able to obviously get yourself prepared for 2028. It's awesome to see. But you know, Connor, I know that you're, you know, a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that's something that's important to you. And I'm just curious of how your faith has played a role in your running career.
Oh, I mean, it's been huge. I don't even know where to start with that. I think just keeping a good balance and keeping a good mindset, it really helps. I think it helps me to not put too much pressure on myself. I feel like I used to put a lot of pressure on myself, especially in my younger years. Like, it was like, I have to win this race, or I have to do this. And now it's like, I can go into a race more relaxed and kind of less on my shoulders and be like, I'm having fun. Like, this is fun. This is a privilege, and it's an opportunity that the Lord has blessed me with. And so what better way to honor that opportunity that I've been given than do my best? And I know that sounds pretty cliche as I'm saying it out loud, but I really do feel that the more I put my heart and mind to the Lord and to following Jesus Christ, I do perform better. One thing that my wife and I did, and I don't know if I should share this because it might be a little too personal, but we made a goal. We had 3 months up in Park City before the Chicago Marathon, and we just did an altitude training trip. And we just finished the Book of Mormon for the first time since we got married about, I think it was like 2 years. But it took us like 2 years and some months to finish it together, which was longer than we would have expected. And then we just finished it and we moved up to Park City. And I was like, hey, like, what do you think about trying to finish it before the Chicago Marathon? It ended up being like 3 chapters a day. So it still wasn't a ton, but it was like a cool commitment of like, you know, if you miss a day, you're like 6 chapters the next day. So it was a little, it did get a little long some of those days, but it was really cool to read together and then talk about, you know, what we were learning in the scriptures. And that was a really special time. And so just committing my commitment to my faith, it really helps me like take a step back and realize, oh, that's important, there's a lot of other things that are more important. While running is important, while competing, while how I do the result, it's important. It's gonna, you know, gonna help me pay my mortgage, it's gonna help me I don't know, in future opportunities, and it's been a goal of mine for a long time. It's not as important as my commitment to Jesus Christ and my commitment to my wife and my family and doing those things and giving those things a priority. So that was one thing that was kind of cool about this training block for Chicago.
Connor, we sincerely appreciate you opening up about that. That is super inspiring. And I know that it meant significant things to you and your wife. And you kind of lead me into my next question. Because I hear Jimmer talk about Whitney and what she did to support him through his ups and downs. How has your wife helped you be in a steady mindset and training regime when it is so easy to get caught in the roller coaster effect of the emotional ups and downs from how you are doing in these competitions and with the pressure that's on you?
Oh, she's been incredible. It's been really nice since she graduated from school. She's been able to take on a lot of the load. I put a lot of burdens on myself that I don't need to. And sometimes it's just easy to, a lot of the time it's easy to be like, hey, Kylie, like I'm getting a little too focused on these results or this, what's going on. And I'm having a lot of people text me, like a lot of people wanting interviews. Can you just handle up all my text messages for the next hour or something like that? And she'll go through every single one.
Wow.
And it's nice to have her do that. It's nice to, it's really nice that I could trust her to do that. Like, that's not something you would trust to very many people, but it's nice to have someone that I can be like, I can say, hey, like, I don't really know how to respond to this. Kylie, do you want to just respond to this? Or I'll tell a lot of people like, hey, like my phone's blowing up right now. I'm getting a lot of people texting me. Can you just text my wife about that? And so a lot of the stuff that needs to get done, but it's not going to affect me running wise, not going to affect me positively. She'll put a lot of that on her, and it just makes it super easy to be an athlete. Makes it easier to be an athlete than it would otherwise.
I'm fascinated by this. I need to have an immediate conversation with my wife, Brittany, about potentially taking on my text messages because I wouldn't mind pawning that portion of my life off at times.
Oh, man.
That's a great veteran move right there. Great veteran move right there.
Yeah.
Hey, you take these for a little bit. I'm just going to chill over here. But no, that's amazing. Good. That is awesome to hear.
How
Such
great
cool
is she?
Story.
Shout out to Seriously. Kylie.
What's right.
a shout out to incredible.
Kylie. Yeah. Thanks. Seriously. That's amazing to hear. I love that. So just, I have a question, right? You're running for miles and miles and miles, and you have no headphones in. Like, does that, you get used to that? Like, do you train like that, or you put headphones in for your training? Because I can't do anything without headphones in if I'm working out.
Yeah, I go when I'm alone, or wear them occasionally.
Okay.
When I wear, like, when I'm with people, it's just easier to talk. And then in workouts, I feel like it's really intense. I'll put them in, like, if I ever work out on a treadmill, I need them. I can't do a workout on the treadmill without music. So, okay. Shout out to one of my sponsors, Shox headphones.
Hey, that's why I did it. That's why I did it right there.
Yeah, they've been making great headphones, and they just gave me a new pair that I love. They gave me a new pair like right before the race. It's like way different than anything I've ever used. So, yeah, I'll use headphones, but.
Yeah,
racing, you're not allowed to use headphones. So it's like in the hard workouts.
Yeah.
Unless it's on a treadmill, I don't do it. Just because I don't want to get so used to that. And then I show up to a race and it's like, all right, now I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage because I can't be blasting music in my ear.
Very true. I always am curious. Like, I would see you guys run around town and in Provo, and you guys are just talking to each other, right? Running 6 minute mile paces or 5 minute mile paces. I'm like, I don't understand how you do that. I can't speak when I'm running. You know what I mean? I can't. I'm just huffing and puffing too much. It's impressive stuff, guys.
Just slow. Try one day where you just slow down a lot and find someone to run with, and then you'll learn you can do it.
Yeah.
Can you use the headphone sunglasses, Connor?
Yeah. Right.
Man. I don't even know. I don't even see those.
Hey, Spence, we're gonna have to start running together, and we'll have to start real slow, right? Because you can't keep up with me at this point.
Come on now, Jimmer.
And we'll speak to each other the whole time. We'll have a podcast through it.
Hey, running podcast. It's gonna be a 3 minute episode.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Oh, it's fantastic. All right, Connor. As we finish up. One, we have really enjoyed how open you have been and how much of your valuable time you have shared with us, and the insights and the faith-promoting stories that you've given to us. It's been so much fun for us. It almost feels like I'm breaking the rules to put an end to part one of our conversation with Connor Mance, because it has been so good and so uplifting. And obviously, he's bringing incredible insights. But that's what we're going to do. When we come back, we move into the open gym portion, a lightning round, if you will, for part two of our conversation with Connor Mance, when From the Logo continues in just a moment.
The path to a more fulfilling life is not an easy one. In body, in mind, and in spirit. At Primo, we strive for all three.
All right, guys, welcome back to the
train,
show.
Perform, recover. Primo.
Today we have Phil Mickelson. And we're
From the Logo rolls on, presented by Primo Golf. Welcome back to the show and part two of our conversation with Connor Mance. And it is the open gym segment. We have chosen to pepper him with some lightning round questions to get ideas of what's the hardest lesson he learned as a pro. Maybe it's still ongoing. And what's his most memorable course and race ever? He's run a lot of them. Part two of our conversation with Connor Mance goes now. So, the first question here for me is, besides John Mayer, what else is in your headphones?
Weird variety. The Killers, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and like the Glitch Mob, if you know who that is.
I haven't heard that.
Weird techno music. Just lots of weird stuff.
Okay, I'm adding that to the Apple Music search right now. Okay, the Glitch Mob.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it works for you, Connor, it can work for me.
Yeah,
I gotta check them out.
Yeah, don't listen to them too much. Like, it's like straight sugar for your ears. It's like super hard, but like after like 10 minutes, you're gonna have a headache. So it's a little rough.
Proper dosage. Okay.
That's amazing.
Proper dosage.
Okay. All right, I got a question for you, rapid fire. What is your pre-night meal? Because I know the night before is probably super important for your meal. What is it?
It'll be like potatoes, chicken, rice. Something very simple.
Okay.
Simple, very simple guy. Sugars and proteins.
There you go.
Okay, next question. Best or most memorable course you have ever raced?
Oh, man. The most memorable is probably the Oklahoma State cross-country course. I know it's not marathoning, but or the Olympic course, one of those two. But the Oklahoma State cross-country course where I won my first NCAA title. And it was a lot of rough things going it like beforehand. The race ended up being like super hard and just kind of the perfect day for me in the end.
Right. So your favorite opponent that you've raced against?
Mm. Oh man, that's a great question. There's certain guys that I always find a way to like beat, but they always get me to like bring out my best. So I don't want to say those guys' names because then it sounds bad. and probably my favorite is probably one of the athletes that I like really looked up to. His name's Eliud Kipchoge. Raced him twice. They were like two of his worst races of his career. So I beat him on one of them, but not the other. And there's just he's the first guy to ever go under 2 hours for the marathon. And that's something like I think is incredible. But just a guy who was like, I don't know, probably the best marathon runner of all time with all he's done from the years and years. He was dominant.
Okay. Final question here, Connor. What's the toughest lesson you've learned as a pro?
This is going to be kind of sad, but it's that I feel like I've learned that a lot more people are cheating and doping and taking drugs than I thought would be. And I think that's been really hard to like come to terms with, because I like to think, you know, we're all on an even playing field. But then, fortunately, nobody I've lost to, let me rephrase that. There's only been a few times where I've lost to people who've ended up testing positive, and they weren't like significant, they won't be like significant pay bumps if their results were disqualified. But yeah, that's been something hard, because I've seen athletes I've competed against do like things that were, you know, kind of otherworldly. And it just comes out like years later that they were on drugs.
That is wild.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough to hear too. You want everybody to be on equal playing field when you're in a racing sport specifically, right? Yeah. Like, geez, though, that's... Yeah, that's it's tough to hear.
This makes being the fastest American man in the marathon with integrity that much better, does it?
Even
not?
Better. Even better. Absolutely, it does. We'll answer that for you. Absolutely, it does.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Oh, Connor, so much fun. I guess at this point, we finished our questions, but if you'd like, feel free to take the mic and give running fans and the running world and everybody listening an idea of what's going to happen for you in the next few years.
Yeah, I'm not going to go too long, but looking forward to the 2028 Olympics, looking forward to the 2032 Olympics, hopefully 2036 Olympics as well. We'll see. One Olympic cycle at a time, but yeah, I'm grateful to have a great coach with Coach Eystone and great training partners. There's like, our group has gotten a lot bigger recently. So there's like 12 of us, maybe more, that are professionals under him. When last year there was like 3 of us. So it's been really cool to see this group grow and grow.
I cannot say enough good things about Connor Mance. And I'm sure all of you feel very strongly how I do after listening to that conversation and about how he leads his life as a professional and as just a good man and husband. A reminder, if you'd like to submit questions for me, Jimmer Fredette, or any of our guests, follow us on our social media accounts. It's simple, at JimmerFTL on Instagram, X, and TikTok. You can also send in questions using the hashtag OpenGymFTL. The 3x3 update is next with GM Jimmer. What's the latest from his top-tier teams as they are positioning to make a run to the Olympics in Los Angeles? And does defense really matter in 3x3? It's a little different. We'll discuss that all next on From the Logo.
If you or your business are looking to reach a wide audience, From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette will help you reach your goals. Whether you're interested in title sponsorship, segment sponsorship, or product placement on the podcast, email us at jimmerftl@gmail.com and let us help you shoot your shot.
From the Logo moves once again into the final quarter with our USA Basketball 3x3 update. GM Jimmer is back. He's got the latest on the drive to gold in 2028 for his 3x3 teams across the globe. Plus, your weekly rule, the game to get more acclimated with one of the fastest growing Olympic sports. Jimmer, what is the word, brother?
Man, today is a good day. Team Miami has qualified for the final, which means that they are in the final tournament to possibly win the whole shebang, right? The whole 3x3 World Tour, they are in it. So that's what you can ask for. Obviously, the top 12 teams go to the final. Right now, they stand number two. They have an automatic bid. They're sitting really well. They have two more tournaments until they do that. And it's been a compilation all the way from April until now to make it to the final. They've played great, especially towards the end of the season. So they are in the final. I'll keep you updated on that. Can't wait to see how my guys do. And let's see here. Let's talk a little bit about, it's not necessarily a rule that we're going to talk about today, but we're going to talk about one of the biggest differences between 5-on-5 basketball and 3x3 basketball. I get this question asked a lot to me, and people would be like, okay, yeah, well, it's half court. It's a 12-second shot clock. You know, you're playing outside. All of those things, obviously fair, understood. The biggest difference for me, that was the hardest thing to adjust to, was that in 3x3 basketball, there is no help side defense. None. Okay. And for a 5-on-5 guy, your coaches your whole life are like 1 foot in the paint, right? Get in front of your guy. You want to make sure that you're helping off of your guy and then get back to it when the ball swings towards your guy. 3x3 basketball, that is not the case. If the ball is on the opposite side of the court, you are hugged up on your man all the way on the other side of the court. The rule is you keep your elbow in their chest or you're touching them at all times. The reason being is because if you help off, right, at all, and they kick it out and they hit a two or they shoot a two, it is so much more valuable and in such a short game compared to 5-on-5 when you're trying to stop guys from getting easy baskets at the rim. Sometimes in 3x3, we let guys shoot layups. Like sometimes you'll see guys that'll just get past you, go to the rim and shoot a layup and no help side coming, and then just sprint out to the 2-point line to try to get a shot off because that one versus a two, right? So you're always attached to your guy. You're always staying. And for me, that was hard to get used to. There were times where I was just kind of ball watching and looking, and then all of a sudden they'd whip it across court and it would be an open two, you know, in 3x3. And guys are like, you got to stay onto your guy. So that took me about 6 months probably to actually feel really comfortable where I was like, all right, I am good. I am going to stay attached to my guy this whole time. When there's an off-ball screen, when there's an on-ball screen, when you're off completely on the other side, does not matter. Stay attached to your guy. That is one of the biggest differences that I had to learn. And, you know, now it's like second nature to me.
Great stuff. I don't care what anybody says. A healthy Jimmer Fredette, still the number one ranked 3x3 player in the world. Today, Jimmer, today. I put you on Team Miami today and you would go and do your thing. And I stand by. I will die on that hill. Great stuff, brother. And a fun podcast for sure with Connor Mance as our guest. Final words from you before we say goodbye.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks, Connor, for being a part of this. We are going to continue to watch you through your 2028 run, his 2032 run, 2036 run, as he talks about. We're excited for Connor and appreciate all that's listening out there. Continue to ask questions, subscribe, listen, give us feedback. We appreciate you guys.
He's on his own push to goal. Jimmer, great stuff, man. Thanks again. A reminder to all of you to shoot your shot in life. We'll see you on the next podcast.